the cold of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. On January the 2nd, 2008, scary thought, isn't it? We're in 2008 and on a roll into the big totalitarian society, which is really all around us right now. But the velvet glove is off the iron fist, and we're beginning to see, at least those who are awake. For newcomers, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com. For previous shows going back 10 years. And also look into alanwattsentientsentinel.eu for transcripts which you can download and copy and pass around to your friends. And these are getting around the world because the whole world is going through this transformation. It's something that was planned 40, 50 years ago at the beginning of the Cold War. They looked upon the future and what kind of future would come out of this. And it was decided it would be a type of combination of communistic rule over the public, but run by a fascist organization at the top of international corporation CEOs who put their own boys in government. And it all worked for the old establishment, as they call it in Britain, an establishment of an aristocracy that's been running the world through different countries and different empires and different eras for hundreds and hundreds of years, all based on commerce and banking and the right or the ability to push money upon other peoples, force them to use it, then tax it all back, which means they get their labor back. Everything comes down to labor, and Karl Marx was quite right on that. The elite are kept in a state of luxury, always have been, by the labor of others below, only because we accept the system we have been given, which is a monetary-based system. That was the first con of all. In ancient times, the priests used to, once they conned the public into the fact that they were the only ones who could contact the deity, be it the sun or whatever, then they used to take in the grain of the public into common granary, and they would dole it out to the farmers at planting time. And eventually they caught on, they could ask for more back, and that was called interest. That's what is your interest in this? That's what interest became, you see. It was to do with seed. And eventually when they caught on to the fact that money could be a substitute for barter, then they went into the banking business. And all ancient temples across the ancient world, be it Greece or Egypt, or in the so-called Holy Land, they had the trapeze, as the Greeks called them, the big banking boys who did their banking right there in the temples. And some of the temples where coinage was minted. And that's the way it was with Rome. And today, most folk are so ignorant of the past that they cannot see what's coming, because we're seeing history repeat itself on a grander scale. And I'll be back with more of this after these following messages. I'm Alan Watt. Cutting through the matrix, and we are cutting through the matrix for those who have already woken up. And that's the problem we have. We're kind of preaching to the choir. There's always newcomers coming in, but there's so much to learn, isn't there? So much catching up to do, especially when those who rule us are on such a roll as they are today. Massively, massively so. Every day, more laws across the world, same laws. Because we're already global, we have been for a long, long time, in fact. And now they're going for the big kill, which is to make sure that everyone on the planet is predictable by having all data 24 hours a day on your every move. That includes what you eat, what you buy, who you talk to, what you say. That's the totalitarian system that's meant to keep us safe from ourselves. Because you see, we, the people, are the enemy. That's the big joke, because it jokes on us. We, the people, are the enemy. We were declared the enemy a long time ago. And if you even read the charter and the various charters of the subdivisions of the United Nations, you'll find it in there that the people themselves are the enemy. Look to the psychiatric and psychology associations. Look at the big players, read what they've printed in their own big magazines, and they've said it, that everyone who's alive today is mentally ill, according to their documentation. Mentally ill means having opinions derived from previous societies, old-fashioned ideas, and following rules that are old-fashioned rules meant for a different era. And if you pass them on to your children, you contaminate them. That's the language they use. And you're all mentally ill. And so you'll have to be reconditioned or eliminated. That's the real world. Meanwhile, everyone's playing themselves and playing massively so with all their free programs on the internet and giving all their data out to all the different little things that appear, asking them very intimate questions to create complete profiles on them. And they're doing it because it's free. And it's so convenient. So convenient. And I've never had a time when they can have so much free sex, for instance. It's so readily available anywhere you go. Has been for a long time. And we're playing ourselves like never before. A world of children, while our betters, you know, those people up there, take care of the big problems, including us, ourselves. We're the big problem. Because it's not intended that we go on playing for very long and use up what they call the world's resources. And sure enough, they've trained us, you see, to go out and work and reward ourselves at least once a month. At least that's not much, once a month. Most folk want to do it all the time with credit cards. And they're constantly rewarding themselves for putting up with boring, depressing, repetitive jobs. And Pavlovian style, sure enough, they reward themselves with buying some trivia or junk or something that's supposed to satisfy a need and make you happy for 5 minutes before you become fed up with it and you want to buy something else. And that's what advertising is based on, is creating dissatisfaction. And they don't have far to go because all they sell you are lies in advertising. That's what advertising is about, selling you a complete fiction. But because we live in an unhappy society, a society which is stressful, a society with that very few people understand, in fact. Everyone wants to fit into something that's really artificial. That's why they kind of feel on edge all the time. It's not a natural system. It's not meant to be natural in this system. And those who run it have decided, as I say, we're using up too much of the world's resources by rewarding ourselves. And they're going to cut back on us, you know, the ones who are mentally ill, meaning the ordinary people. And they have all the DNA, all the sciences they believe they need to recreate perfect humans to serve them better in the future. And I'm not kidding about this. They have these, they call them ARCs, set up. I watched a public broadcasting program 2 or 3 years ago on a rainy Sunday afternoon, and they had a professor on from a university in Louisiana, and she was in charge of a huge center, biggest state in Louisiana, for cryogenics, where they had everything, the genes of every animal and insect frozen, and they had experimented in bringing them back to life, you know, bringing the male and female together and inserting them in different species even as a host carrier and giving birth quite satisfactorily to them. This is all done at higher levels, and it was the World Wildlife Society that owned this ark. They have three of them. They claim that one society worldwide. I can bet something else too about this big ark in the sky. The space station, the International Space Station, ISS, will also be another ark. And that was foreseen a long time ago, in the 1500s, by someone at the High Mystery Religion, who was not crystal-gazing, as he told the public, but he knew the agenda. They knew there were unraveling sciences back then, and they knew what they could do with the wealth of the world and all the labor of the world to work towards their big idea. And it's pretty well happened. Everything we're taught about science at the bottom level, and that's from professorship down, is obsolete. Everything they tell you they're working towards is actually done and obsolete, gone. The bottom levels are still rediscovering things all the time. The Dolly the Sheep thing was a bottom level attempt. It's already been done. That's why it's called research. The searching was done above them long ago. And all the problems have been ironed out. Now, the only problem they have left is how to keep us all, Pavlovian style, playing ourselves and enjoying ourselves like never before, like there's no tomorrow, while they pull the rug from under our feet. And that's what's happening now with the totalitarian system being set up. I wondered why in the 90s, the mid-90s, that we suddenly had all these big disaster programs, even across Canada, in little potato towns where nothing happened. And they were having disaster scenarios with these new disaster agencies and controls that they set up. They never had that during the Cold War, when supposedly, we're going to get nuked any time and any day, every week, every year, year after year. And after the Cold War, they were having all of these disaster scenarios and rehearsals. Why? It's really to do with what's scheduled to happen and is happening as a snowball starts to come down the hill and get bigger and bigger. As they devalue the dollars, as they create the new world society and pull the rug from under our feet financially and so on, it's all to take care of the riots that will ensue across the world. And that's why the Department of Defense put out a 90-page report on the next 30 years of what they see coming. Now, these guys are not paid big, big money. They don't hire the best of the best in their fields to sit and guess at what's going to come along. They know what's coming along. They're not telling you why there's going to be massive rioting across the planet. But what they are telling you is what they're doing to prepare for the rioting across the planet. And they foresee 30 years of it. They even have small nuclear-type bombs, battlefield bombs, to use on the public. Now, what on earth do you think is planned that would drive the general public who are out rewarding themselves and having sex 2.5 times a week and all that kind of stuff right now? What do you think would get them away from television, from the sports and all the rest of it, and start rioting? Well, maybe it's turning off the electricity, for one thing. Maybe it's by forcing them to pay 4 or 5 times as they're paying now for fuel and gasoline and electricity and all the other energies that we use. Maybe it's rationing the food. This is going to be all of these things, all of it. And believe you me, no one man is going to stop this in any country. It's not going to happen. because you have a global elite who've planned this for a long time, and the interactions of all their associations are finally meshed together like never before, and they have been actually for a long time. Professor Carl Quigley talked about it, and he was in on this whole big secret. He was the official historian for the American branch, the Council on Foreign Relations, of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, that helped plan all this. The same guys that planned and came out on national television in Canada, they planned the integration of the Americas. They drafted all of the integration scenarios up for them to sign, all the forms for them to sign, the agreements and treaties for presidents to sign. They boasted about it on national television, CBC Canada. A private non-governmental organization drafted the treaties up. And you still think you live in a democracy. And the moon's a balloon, as David Niven said. And we're on a roll like never before. And it's time to get off your Jack Duff and start talking fast and hard to those who can change things. Back after these messages. Cutting through the matrix. And we have an odd one on the phone here. It's called Hippopotamus Anonymous, who's called in. Are you there, Hippo?
Yes, hi, Alan. How are you?
Not so bad.
That's good. I heard you were a little under the weather. I listened to your blurb.
I opened the window and influenza.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't get tax on it up there, I hope.
No.
Okay. Hey, Alan, I tell you, the 31st, I was really looking forward to hearing you, and I guess this, since you were sick, that's why I didn't, but I only started listening to you very recently, and I tell you, you've been one hell of an inspiration to me as a writer.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you, and I want to thank you for your integrity and your honesty, and I tell you, I'm really, I'm getting into my 40s now, and I'm really tired of being tricked by the magicians that are running things, you know, these
yeah.
magical people.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, I have a proposition out here for the, and I wrote you a letter actually. Maybe what I'll do is just email it to you. But you know, I've become very suspicious of this deified Ron Paul character, and I know a few people have called in. I've heard a few people mention this, but it almost seems heretical to say it on the Patriotic Network. But there's a tape out there that the Patriots should look at, and it's a 1988 episode of the Morton Downey Jr. show. I don't know if you remember him. Do you remember Morton Downey Jr.?
No.
Okay. He was a precursor to the Jerry Springers and the Oswaldo Riveras, and they can find Ron Paul in the crude real flesh, yelling and yucking it up and sliming around. And it's very interesting. In the audience, there's our friend Bo Greitz. And it's a very interesting tape. It's on YouTube. I know you don't go to YouTube very often. But
I know Bo Greitz was in the audience, you said?
Bo Greitz was in the audience. It was very interesting. He was there ostensibly to discredit the doctor. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, it was interesting, Ron Paul yells over to Bo Greitz and addresses him by name and says, and calls George Herbert Walker Bush a drug dealer and says, isn't that right, Bo Greitz? You know, because that was his claim to fame back in the day.
Yeah.
And then what happens is he gets up to the podium and he starts, you know, it was called the loudmouth actually, and it was just nothing but hysterical yelling mostly.
Yeah, sort of a Saturday Night Live type. Yeah.
Oh, worse, far worse. I mean. And so if he really thought at that time behaving that way, there's this one segment where he's he's absolutely degrading a young man because he was overweight. This is Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Candidate for president of the United States, the patriot that's going to eliminate the CIA, the IRS, and the Federal Reserve, and all
that
stuff.
The thing is, though, you see, I've been telling people forever that politics is showbiz.
Right.
It's pure showbiz.
Right.
And politicians are put out there. And I always tell the people, whatever your bent of mind is, your frame of mind, I guarantee you they've got someone out there for you to follow.
Sure.
Because they do surveys on the public, and they always give you a middleman who says all the right things which are current at the time.
Sure, of course they do.
They've got their pulse on the people. And we know that, you see, this is not real. Even the governments we have are not really real. They deal with small local issues, but they're not allowed to deal with the big ones at the top. Because there is a parallel government, as Quigley said, and Margaret Thatcher said, and others have said, and every ex-president and prime minister belongs to this parallel government. And it's been here since the beginning of the 1900s, according to Quigley. It was already 60 years old when he wrote his book, and he said it had been running then. That's how they have this international setup all up and running. That's beyond national politics. It's international.
Sure.
And if the only public could only realize this, that to stop following the people they give us to vote for, the real people would have to come forward and show who they are for the first time.
Exactly. And it's interesting because, you know, now we have a consortium of mysterious fellows, people that own these free voting machine companies, and they literally have absconded with the electoral system, and they actually manage it directly. They oversee it. So even if Ron Paul were elected, how could he prove that he didn't himself or people on his side rig the election? So the whole thing is suspect. So my proposal is this, and I'm calling out for the musicians and poets and artists to really maybe lead this. And I say just let's declare abstinence. And for 3 days, whenever these machines and this technology is used, is to just shut down the economy and have a nationwide strike.
Well, that'd be wonderful. I mean, if it strikes for all the things that matter, you'd see a very smoothly functioning society, including the price of gas and everything else and food and so on. We come skyrocketing right down the way, rather than up the way, if everyone stopped simply driving around for about a week.
Right.
You would see them scurry to get things down in price very quickly.
I think people have to understand that if you use these voting machines, you're endorsing the machine.
Yeah.
And to the act, I've never voted myself like you. I tell people that I cast my vote back in 1985 when I joined the United States Marine Corps. But, you know, I don't vote, and I think that people really need to think about using those machines, and if they have integrity, just say no to the voting machines until they get rid of those things.
Okay, thanks for calling. And we're back after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
It's very sad when you realize that the world isn't real as it's presented to us, and that the game of politics, that's why they call it the game of politics at the top, it's just a game for the public. And how democratic can it be when you need millions of dollars for the supposed ordinary persons to run and get in? And the whole idea under democracy was that someone from your area, your little town or whatever, would go off and represent you. Well, when has that ever happened? Once they created the party system, your politician would turn back to his constituents and say, well, I couldn't really go along. They wouldn't go along with it, and I have to go with my party. Well, why do you bother voting for them if they have to go with their party and make little laws that affect you to your detriment? What's the point in voting for them? See, the whole thing is a con. But they realized back in Britain, this whole democratic business, and they learned it from their ancient records. The Greeks talked about it copiously, how they go through these different systems of democracy and republicanism and fascism and so on, and the tyrant and dictator and all the rest of it. It had all been tried out before, and they knew how the game was played. And Britain realized that if they didn't have a vote every few years, then the public would have insurrections. And so you wait for 4 or 5 years and suffer more misery, and then you vote the last bunch of crooks out. That's how politics and democracy works. You don't really vote a new party in. You're so sick of the last bunch of crooks. And yet you still haven't caught on. It's not just that they're crooks. They all work for the one big institution, the World Corporation. And it's a supra-government. It's above all national governments, always has been. And these characters that you vote in are generally millionaires, and most of them are lawyers who've dealt with real estate and big business and have been CEOs of corporations. What on earth do they have in common with you? And nothing. And that's the bottom line. And Quigley said it. He said, we always make sure that the top people and all sides, all parties, are theirs. It's like the Politburo. Which Politburo member are you going to vote for, A, B, C, or D? That's the old Soviet Union. Here, this gives them different names for parties, the left wing, right wing, but they don't tell you they're both attached to the body, the same bird. And the real head of the bird, the real power behind it is behind that shield there. You'll never see it. And that's what it stands for. But you'd have insurrections every few years. And Jefferson was quite right. He told us, see, they do tell us how the game is played. If you listen to the Illumined Ones carefully, they tell you how it's played. And he said, when you see an agenda going forth between exchanges of houses, meaning the different parties getting voted in and out, the same agenda being carried forward, you will know you're under tyranny. That's your symptom. And you look at all the UN laws they put out and signed into the books every year. And then the global treaties are signed every year in every country, all joining us all together closer and closer with the same multinational and international corporations at the top. Then you see this agenda rolling forward regardless of the change of parties. In a parliament building or a congressional hall, doesn't matter. The same agenda steamrolls. And I've been watching this my whole life. I knew when I was a child, my parents couldn't see it. I could see it. And that's the trouble we have, because we're dealing with most people who still live in the belief of the world that they've swallowed as it has been presented to them. It's a con game. A con game. And you see, a few people like Quigley have told us so. And they worked for the ones who really run the world. And Quigley was all for this global elite, by the way. He thought it was a swell idea. And that the elite and intelligentsia had the right to rule the world on behalf of the dull and ignorant beneath them. The profane, as they call them. Now we have Alex in Canada. Are you still there, Alex?
Yes. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was watching, speaking of politicians, I was watching CNN yesterday afternoon, and Mitt Romney was giving a speech from Acme, Iowa.
Yeah.
And it was the usual political speech, a lot of nonsense. But he did say something that really almost knocked me off my chair. Just a little one-liner. He said, the world is going through enormous change. I think that you're going to see more change in the next 10 years than you've seen in the last 10 centuries.
That's true. Yeah.
But he didn't go into detail exactly what that change would be, just that, of course, he was the man to lead it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of all these changes, if people, average person today is really unhappy and they're, go through life with a lot of stress, but they still get to go see, got to go to the movies, go for dinner, maybe take a little vacation.
Yeah.
If things start really, this is the picture that we're painting of the future of, things are, I can see things getting really bad. I mean, like, how are people going to handle these changes emotionally and psychologically? I don't think they're prepared for that.
That's why they're predicting all these riots going to start and then build up to incredible sized, massive riots, national riots, and they're prepared to use neutron bombs on the public. This is from the Department of Defense for Britain and NATO, all NATO countries.
People are going to break. This is...
Yeah, they will break. And I've always said that the masses of the public who really, really live in a conditioned matrix, they have never had an original thought of their own. They truly haven't. You've got to understand that. They've been conditioned and super conditioned and scientifically indoctrinated. They are gone. They always have been gone, technically.
Okay.
They'll completely break, and you couldn't help them because what you're telling them is beyond them. Even when it's happening, they will refuse to believe it. You know, they've done studies on people that were taken off by the Nazis and put in camps.
Yes.
And the Nazis even told people, it wasn't just Jews, there was Gypsies, there was Christians too, and Christian Democrats and so on, that were rounded up. And they were told that the people hated them, and they were taking them to safety. And the men generally had a little inkling that something stunk here. But the women, again, the old strategy, always aim your propaganda at the female because she likes the home, she takes care of the home, she wants security. So you go over the head of the husband by promising security because she will come, and then, as Hitler said, must follow the children and therefore must follow the men. That's how it works. And they even packed their suitcases as they were going to hotels and so on, still wanting to believe, wanting desperately to believe that these people were telling them the truth. They were going to help them, set them up in this secure area where they'd have their own little area, their own townships, basically. And even when it was happening, when the unthinkable was happening to them and they went to the wall, I can guarantee you to the last minute, they still could not believe that was happening to them. And what at that time was called the most civilized scientific society in the world.
Yeah.
And that will happen even worse.
Yeah.
Here.
People just block out because they think it's impossible, this reality. It's too terrible to even conceive.
They can't handle it at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Alan, can you speak to about what's going on with the border now? Okay, 2010 rolls around. There's the Mexican border, the Canadian-U.S. border comes down. There's free flow of goods and people. But at the same time, you've talked about restriction of travel in the future.
Yeah.
So how does that play into like the one idea of free flow of goods and labor, and that we're going to be restricted in our cities?
Well, if you notice the free trade deal, if you go into the free trade deal, it's not for all trade, it's only for authorized international corporations.
Right, okay.
Now, if you go into labor...
yeah,
what they're talking about is authorized labor, where the international corporations will say, I need so many of this, so many of that. And those are the ones who are authorized. They said that even the bureaucracies will be internationalized, and bureaucrats will be a new type of nomad going from city to city across the planet. That was in Jack Satali's book, Millennium.
Oh, Millennium, yeah.
And he was a top bureaucrat, still is at the United Nations. And he said that the next boat people of the world will be leaving America looking for jobs. But that's what it's about. It'll be a selective labor. It won't be for you to just cross a border and get across because you want to go and live there. And even Europe has had a temporary reprieve there where they've allowed us to think you can go anywhere in Europe and work, but you can't really. Now, you can go and live there if you can survive, if you can get a job. But that's going to stop as well. That's why they've issued them their national ID cards. Because these are active chips, and these will give off alarms if you approach the border. That's the idea.
Crazy. Yeah, a girlfriend of mine actually applied for a job as a security for the border, Border Patrol security.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's a huge huge hiring blitz that's been going on for months now.
I know.
They're getting prepared. And plus that show you talked about the other day, Border. So what's going on at the border? You know, they're getting us ready for stuff that's going on in and around the border, you know?
I know. Well, you've got to have the right qualifications to get hired at the border if she's female.
Yeah.
Walk, the song is Walk Like a Man, My Son.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the one. That's what they're hiring, on purpose. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah. Oh, I know. They've got to be tough ones.
They want the really aggressive ones that have keys hanging off their belts. And, that's what they're after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Short haircut, too. Very, very, very short. Elvis Presley haircut. They like to prod and insert your body cavities.
Oh.
That's the type they're looking for. I'm not joking. They've got them at the same airports. That's priority hiring.
Yeah, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it.
Yep.
Thanks so much, Alan.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Now I've got Tim in North Carolina. Are you there, Tim?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Alan. How you doing?
Not so bad.
I seen a good one the other morning. I just had to let you know about this one. I've had me a couple of cups of coffee and a couple of cigarettes before I went to work, and I had C-SPAN 2 on, and they had this thing at the New York Public Library, and George Soros was on that, so I said, well, let me check this out. Mm-hmm. And the premise was this guy had this book, What Orwell Didn't Know. So they were getting into all this virtual reality and stuff. And then they started talking about the media was using, and this is when my ears perked up, they were using dialectic and propaganda, and I couldn't believe they were talking about it on TV, you know.
Yeah.
And they saying this is not the reality, and they make a long story short, they finally got around to George Soros, and this is when my ears really went up, because they were saying, they were talking about dialectic, but listen what he says. He says, we need to benefit from this. So immediately I'm saying he's talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, we are the enlightened ones. And I couldn't believe that guy really said that. It was like a double whammy. He was, on the dialectic thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, these characters can tell you what they really mean, what they really think. It's the public that hear them generally hear it from a different angle, or we readjust it and say, well, I didn't really... I know he said it, but I don't believe him. They can say dastardly things, too, to you, to the public, and about the public. People say, well, don't... We like this guy, and it couldn't really mean what he said. David Suzuki said that in Canada, and he's loved in Canada. He's put up as the green man for the whole green movement and the news. They're even having him on weekly shows in the States shortly on greening, on programs on greening and green environments for your home. Everyone's green energy and all the rest of it. And David Suzuki is a geneticist, in fact. He does all these nature programs for World Wildlife. And he, this guy likes furry animals and fishes and all the rest of it. And he said on national television a few years ago, they'd have to basically kill off three-quarters of the population to save the world. And there wasn't a peep from the public because they couldn't believe this nice man that loves animals and they've grown up with wanted to kill them. But they do tell you the truth.
Yeah, and I'm starting to hear it too. If you listen real good, when they use the word "we," they're really talking about them.
Exactly. Oh yeah. And George Soros, I mean, is another one put up there as a philanthropist. Exactly what Weishaupt said and Pike and others said. They create these big foundations under the guise of philanthropy, and they would fund the NGO groups, non-governmental organizations, which would then really be the power structure under a democracy. They would push government to get demands made and so on. And that's the Rockefellers, that's all of these groups, and the Soros Foundation, and Gates as well. Gates was backed by the intelligence agencies to steal everyone else's patents and create his programs, because they wanted one system for the world to monitor everyone. And he was just a front man. And now, of course, he's a big philanthropist that's got huge NGO groups that he's going to back financially to get what he wants done. Can the average person in a democracy get thousands of people behind them to back them on something? Followers, of course you can. So democracy is a complete farce in that case. And they've always said that democracy would always come to this, where only certain party, you have to belong to a party to have any power, and the parties themselves would have an inner intelligentsia at the top that would go off in their own direction. And NGOs would work in hand and glove with the democracies, and that's what we have. The big NGOs are funded by the big institutions, the so-called philanthropists that Adam Weishaupt talked about.
Yeah, and you know, one way I've learned to recognize them is when they get up and they start introducing each other with these big titles.
Yes.
and they try to make each other look like an expert, and they do it to each other, and then they try to suck you in this game, and it's just funny. It's unbelievable.
It's a jousting match. It's an entertainment for themselves. They enjoy this entertainment. It's the same in Britain. You know, they used to have these slanging matches across the House of Commons in the Parliament building between the parties, and they sit on opposite sides. And they shout at each other, and they do this sort of old boy ha 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 as they mock each other. And then they'd all go off to the same pubs and have a big drink on each other. Is how they fooled the public. It's all a show for the public.
Yeah, and that part when you know what got me about this thing? They were talking about the real stuff, the dialectic, and reality is not reality.
Yeah.
But then he slips in, we need to benefit from this.
Oh, yeah.
We are the enlightened ones. You know, he actually says that. You know?
Yes, well, he believes it. I mean, even his name, you see, is a given name. A lot of these guys adopt names for their role in life. And Soros comes from the Greek, really, for a serpent or a dragon.
This language thing, I've been looking at it hard, and just about every word you look at it has got something in it.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, they love these games, and of course the public are in ignorance of them, but they use these games and codes and names all the time.
And even
the Armand Hammer, I mean, Armand Hammer got his name because his father changed the family name to Arm and Hammer. And it was to symbolize the Masonic arm coming down on the gavel, and that's what the Soviet Union, of course, used too in their symbol. But they love these little change in names. Their names become their function generally.
Mm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Alan, I'll let you finish up. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for calling in. Back after these messages. And we have Chris from Texas on the line. Are you there, Chris?
Hi, Alan.
Hello. Yeah. Go ahead.
You mentioned a couple times that seeking the truth, as synchronicities will start to happen in their life.
Yeah.
And I had something that happened to me. I went on a trip to El Paso, just kind of whim, you know, and I was kind of in a a transitional state in my life.
Yeah.
And I kept running into very odd, it was very the name Davy Crockett kept coming up in weird, strange ways. I would walk down the street, and I saw this. It was kind of a I was in a wall, and I don't know why I happened to look at that time, but it was Davy Crockett, and it said something about him. And then right after that, I went to a library, and I sat down at the table, and there was a card, like a business card, and it had like a little cartoon of a drum set with like eyes and stuff. And it said Davy Crockett, drummer.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I was kind of exploring and walking around the town, and I came across an enormous Scottish Rite temple that had an open library.
Mm-hmm.
And I went inside, and it was open to the public. And I walked inside, and I was taking a look around. I was looking at the books and all the, you know, the creepy stuff they usually have inside those places.
And there's Davy Crockett again, eh?
Right. A painting of Davy Crockett on the walls.
Yeah.
I walked into this big open forum, and they had all these, you know, all these famous people throughout history. And I just, you know, I looked up, and there's Davy Crockett.
Yep.
And I was wondering if and there's also a couple other things I don't want to go too much into it. That was just it's very, very odd. And
But you do go through synchronicities. This is the thing. If you start, you see, all ancient religions knew this. I mean, even Buddhism and all the rest of them know that certain things will happen when a person starts waking up. And one stage in the old Buddhism, I'm talking about the old Buddhism, was that these odd synchronicities would start showing up. And the trick was not to be distracted by them, but to almost ignore them and go to the next step which would come. And this is a process of actually waking up. It's an odd phenomena that often seems unrelated to waking up, but it seems somehow connected. But you will find these things will happen. There are other things in the world apart from just the purely physical, as I say, and not to go off into the New Age phenomenon, which is totally controlled and manipulated, but there are certain things which do happen with the power of the mind, and certain things come your way as well. The right people often come your way if you're looking for them and you're sincere. Perhaps that's the real message, you're sincere about something. But all these guys, sure enough, were Masons. And Travis and all the rest of them are all Freemasons. That's always been the story of the U.S. And we're back with more next week. And from myself, Hamish and myself, it's good night from up in Ontario. And may your God or your gods go with you.